mouth. She wants to ride it, she's trying to hide it. I'm cool as ever, she's too excited. Her man look like he wanna fight. He ain't doing nothing but running his mouth. Talk about it, we all about it. They making plans, we sit and count. Our chair is stacked just like a mountain. You heard about it, she running her mouth. She wants to ride it, she's trying to hide it. I'm cool as ever, she's too excited. Her man look like he wanna fight. He ain't doing nothing.
So this is what we're doing now. Losing back-to-back games at home. This is what we're doing now. I feel awful for Packers fans who stayed up late last night thinking, well, it's been ugly. They haven't played well, but they could still win this game. So I'm going to commit and I'm going to hang and I'm going to watch whatever the hell that ended up being. Packers lose. It was ugly. It was embarrassing yet again. I thought that the low point was last week, losing the way they did to that team. This might be the low point, Gabe. This might be the low point because your defense played well enough to beat the defending champs. Now, are they the same iteration of the Eagles as they were last season? No, not yet. But they've got talent all over the field. And your defense came to play, shut it down, held them to 10, and you can't put the ball in the end zone more than that Josh Jacobs Herculean effort. This might be the low point of the season.
And not even like close to getting into field goal range. Right, like they had the one drive that resulted in a touchdown. Last week, at least, they moved the football. They just sucked in the red zone. They just sucked moving the ball all over the place tonight. Or last night. It was just bad. All around bad. This offense isn't very good. The offensive line isn't very good. The playmakers aren't very good. Josh Jacobs isn't as good as he was last year. It's bad. It's bad. And that's the thing. I don't know how they find and how they get themselves out of this funk. Because it doesn't look like there's an end in sight.
The loss stings, but how would we feel if McManus ties it up and then they squeak it out in overtime? We still wouldn't feel great.
But I'd feel better.
We'd feel better than we do.
But you're still in the driver's seat then, right? Like, at least you're in the driver's seat of, all right, the division, everything is still, and I guess everything still is in front of them with five divisional games still to go. Your margin for error is a lot smaller now in those games because you've lost the two games the last 2 weeks the way that you have. But if they find a way to steal a win, Chew, at least it's a win. Like,
yeah,
winning,
you got another week.
Winning's always better than losing. Like,
yeah, it's just I did not see the offense playing this poorly. Is it time? I just think these receivers are just so average. I really do.
You think it's the receivers, huh?
Well, Jordan's not seeing things.
Jordan played terrible.
He's not seeing things.
We have defended Jordan. We have said that we think he can be the guy because, again, you have seen flashes from him. You have seen stretches from him.
Yeah.
You have seen that it's in there, this ability to read a defense, go through your progressions, find the open man, create a rhythm, all of these things that are very basic to the quarterbacking position. You have seen them. But then like last night shows up, Chew, and it goes, what the hell happened? I heard last week, I think it was Chris Canty on Unsportsmanlike. It must have been after the Panthers game.
Mm-hmm.
Say that Jordan Love is the most Jekyll and Hyde quarterback in the league. And I was like, ooh, that's interesting. I think he might be right, Gabe. I think he's the guy
one.
who you've seen play really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not consistently. And then play really, really bad. Yesterday was bad, guys.
Is Hyde the bad one?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer to that. Is Hyde Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde?
Hyde is the bad one.
Dr. Jekyll is the doctor.
Correct.
He's playing more like Hyde. I mean, they have to accept. Tucker Kraft's not walking through the door. And now Elgton Jenkins isn't walking through the door. It is what it is. So when you play every week, and I've said it all along. I mean, you got to coach your A game every week when you're depleted. You got to A players have to carry the load and play like A players every week.
Okay.
And that's just not happening.
Chu, you need to help me with something because it seems like it seems like teams have figured out Matt LaFleur and how to get him to do what they want, and that is basically run the football because the Packers aren't very good at it. Just go into your too high shell, go into light boxes, and he's going to run the football. Even Jordan Love's going to run the football. They're not going to check out of it, as we saw on 4th and 1 last night, late into the game. How do you get to a point where, yeah, defenses clearly want to play too high? I think every defense wants to play too high, but not every defense does. How do you get to a point where you dictate what the defense does instead of react?
Run the ball, because that way you get them out of two shell. That way you can run your play action.
So they're just screwed. Because they can't run the ball.
Well, here's what
they can't run
game.
The ball to. They just can't. They've been facing these light boxes, yeah. And they had what Jacobs was at 3.5 yards per carry last night. They were under 4 yards again as a team. So what you're telling me is they're just screwed.
A stat I saw yesterday on Twitter was the Packers are one of 5 offenses to be under 1 yard. Under 1 yard before contact on their early down runs to halfbacks. If the offensive line is bad, then pivot. You have no other choice.
What I think it is I think defenses respect Josh Jacobs.
But they don't.
They're playing too high.
They don't respect the offensive line. They don't think this offensive line is very good.
Correct.
They don't think Rashid Walker's a good run backer, a run blocker. They don't think Banks is either. I mean, Banks had a key, even though there were 3 of them, Banks had a key false start, you know, in the first half or second quarter. I'm not sure when it was, you know. You can't, especially as a veteran player, you can expect it from young players to make knuckleheaded plays and stuff like that. But when you're a veteran like that, man, it's just, especially in a game like this where every play counts.
So in your pie chart of blame then, Chu, are you going offensive line? Is that bear the brunt of the weight? Because look, plenty of blame to roll around. Defense is going to be spared from this, by the way, because we all agree, right? I want to make sure we're all in agreement. The defense played well. Not only did they play well, but we got some stats here about Micah Parsons. You guys were talking about how some of the corners played. Like, they played well enough to win that game. If you hold the Eagles to 10 points, you should win that game.
Simply put, they're Super Bowl good. That defense can win a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. That, plain and simple, end of story, period. Yeah. Move on.
So,
pie
chart of blame, Chu.
Most of it's going on LaFleur and Love. Because
75% Love, between those two?
Yeah, probably. Love, you're being paid a lot of cabbage, and you're not playing like you're getting paid a lot of cabbage. And then just LaFleur's, I'll give you an example, guys. Okay, and this goes to a coaching point. This is a very simple coaching point. The 4th and 1 in the fourth quarter, a huge play in the game, right?
Yep.
Huge play in the game. To me, as I look at that, that's either read zone or these coaches don't know what the hell they're doing. Because if it's not read zone, why do you have the quarterback showing to where the ball is running? Why aren't you going out the back door with the hopes of maybe drawing a linebacker or someone just a flash to look at Love going out the back door? And if the play fake is good enough, that makes a difference. If you watch the play, he hands off, and if it's not read zone, he follows Josh Jacobs. What are you doing? When I talk about plays off of plays, right? That's one of their favorite plays. He should always be going out the back door. So you run that 2 or 3 times in the game, and then you hit it and go out the back door. I don't see a rhyme or reason as to what they do. And the way we did it is like you had running plays, and then off of those exact same running plays, you have play action pass. I mean, it sounds like a small thing, but at the end of the day, Holmgren would always say, once you let the small crap go, you're going to let bigger crap go. And I think that's where this team is at.
I think the great point that's being made there, though, is that the offense has become predictable.
Yes.
Right? I mean, we saw the clip, obviously. Everybody saw the clip that was circulating on social media.
Now it comes down to a 4th down and 1.
Inside zone this way. Inside zone this way. Eagles knew exactly where the play was going.
Yeah.
And that's how it ended up.
This is very simple to me, what's happening. I think there is a Grand Canyon sized gulf between who's to blame here and Jordan Love and Matt LaFleur, and it's Matt LaFleur. T teams have figured out this offense. They know they can bait the Packers into less effective plays by playing too high shell. All they do is they line up in it and they say, run it at us because we're better off with you guys running the ball. And Matt LaFleur and Jordan Love, for whatever reason, have decided they don't like any of their pass plays against too high. They don't have any in the playbook they like. So they're going to run it. It's going to be less effective. In the press conference, Matt LaFleur said, our run game was effective. Well, it wasn't. By every measure that we have, you can do yards per carry, you could do EPA. On first and second down runs in this game, the Packers had negative 10 cumulative EPA. They were putting themselves consistently behind the mark. And what did Matt LaFleur do to respond? He kept doing it over and over and over again.
Because
if you don't trust Jordan Love, that's one thing. Guess what? You're now coaching for your job, so you need to prove it's not you and it's him.
Well, I don't think it matters. Like, if it's still, if he does that, and I know we can talk to Jason about this in a little bit when he joins us, because Jason asked the let it rip question last night to both LaFleur and Love, because that was a turning point back in 2023, asking, hey, do we need to get back to that? Even if it is Jordan Love and they lose games, like, that's it for Matt.
Yeah, and he should be very worried.
Yeah,
the way you've performed on offense, the only team you haven't struggled since they figured you out was Pittsburgh, because they said, we want to stop Josh Jacobs because Mike Tomlin thinks it's 2001 still. And that's the only reason. Every other team is forcing them into what they know is going to beat them. They know they aren't good enough. They aren't talented enough to continue and dink and dunk and not do the right things. It's a Matt LaFleur issue. He does not know what to do with the talent he has. And when you lose Tucker Kraft and you say, maybe we should switch things up again. Nope. Six of the first seven plays are running plays. What is that? What are you doing?
Well, when you've got wide receivers who track the ball by just thinking they decide they need to be a defensive back and then it hits them in the back of the head.
Why is Bo Melton have five targets, Gabe?
No.
Why is our wide receiver who converted to corner, who's now playing wide receiver, getting five targets?
Did he convert to corner?
Well, he played a lot in the training camp.
Did he convert to corner? Because he hasn't played a single snap defense, Joshy. He only plays offense.
Why are they running a game plan like this? What is it?
I'm not defending Matt LaFleur. But
I know. I'm yelling at you because I want answers.
The answer is the team's not. The offense, as talented as the defense is, the offense just isn't that talented. It's just not. The offensive line's been really good in years past, is bad this year. And the pass catchers, as Chewy started the segment with, are average at best. Like, as much as Christian Watson can be a difference maker, the play I'm referencing where they go up top again, and he thinks it's overthrown to the point where he has to turn into a defensive back and hits him in the back of the head, you got to track that better, man. The difference between him getting $13 million and even just getting up to that $25 million level that I'm sure he wants to get to is really good wide receivers make that play. They go and make that play for their quarterback.
Well,
and Christian Watson just was incapable of doing so, had decided that he needed to bail and become a defensive back. Like, seriously, if he just keeps with it, instead of hitting him in the back of the head, put up your hands and hit you in the face mask.
Well,
like, the offense just isn't talented enough, and Matt LaFleur doesn't have any answers. It's a really bad combination.
800-990-3776, taking your reaction all morning long to the Packers' 10-7 loss yesterday to the Philadelphia Eagles at Lambeau Field. Back-to-back losses at Lambeau Field, I think for like the first time since 2013. I got a boatload of stats in front of me. I got a boatload of nuggets in front of me that are going to also articulate just how bad this game was. Love went 0-for-6, 3 sacks, 2 scrambles, and lost a fumble, went under pressure. That, again, goes to the offensive line. Green Bay falls to 1-3 when holding opponents under 17 points. That's the most such losses in the NFL. They are holding teams to under 17 points. That's 4 games. They have lost 3 of them. This offense isn't good enough. This was by far the low point of the season when you add what they did the week before, when you take all the garbage narrative, the conversation, the comments that were made in the week leading up to this game about how they were still good enough and they could get it done and that, you know, that was a wake-up call and all of those things you hear when a team suffers a bad loss. And then they go ahead and they essentially duplicate the effort on offense. 800-990-3776. We want your reaction this morning. Are you ready to kick Matt LaFleur out? Are you ready to make a coaching change? Matt LaFleur certainly on the hot seat after this coaching performance. Are you ready for that change? Jason Wilde is going to join us here on the show. I'm sure he will have plenty of insight from 1265. It's right after this.
It's back, the Black Friday event at Ewald Automotive Group. It's their biggest event yet. Shop vehicles with up to $10,000 off, or 0% financing, or zero down. They'll do whatever it takes to move all remaining 2025s. Their biggest savings of the year, lowest interest rates, maximum trade values, and huge selection. Black Friday is back now at every Ewald location, and it all starts at EwaldAuto.com.
Put. All Packers, all the time.
He was a field-tilting player, and the reason why Gabe and many others are so concerned is that this guy's on the field, he changes the offensive dynamic. They are a different offense when he is there.
Okay, most of the time.
You know Homer calls Matt LaFleur soft all the time? Matt LaFleur is like Vince Lombardi compared to me.
It's Jason Wilde on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Jason Wilde is brought to you by Lakeland Supply. Lakeland Supply is in business to make your business better. Set up a free packaging and supply chain assessment at lakelandsupply.com. Exterior Pros. Ready to tackle your home improvement project? Exterior Pros and Baths is giving $3,000 off roofing, siding, windows, or bath remodels this month. Visit extpros.com. Also brought to you by Century Foods. Change your grocery game plan to locally owned Century Foods, home of the best meat, freshest produce, and tastiest treats.
It's a very good morning to get some insight from Jason Wilde about what the hell we watched last night. Packers losing to the Eagles 10-7 on Monday Night Football. Now back-to-back losses at home. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning, Jennifer. Good morning, everyone. How are you?
What time did you get to sleep last night?
3:12.
3:12.
Shudder. All right. Well,
good talking with you guys.
Really appreciate you hanging out with us this morning. Jason, what are they saying? What's going on with the offense? Why is it so anemic?
Yeah, it stinks. That's what's going on. I love the word inconsistency because everyone seems to think that that's an explanation. And all that is describing in what way they're anemic, right? Why are you inconsistent? That is the piece of information I'm looking to know. I think the problem is just it's everywhere, obviously, right? I mean, I don't know what Love is thinking on the ball. Where I know he's trying to avoid the sack, so I guess I know the motive, but I mean that fumble. I mean, what are you doing? Of all the things that are at play here, I think it all starts up front, right? Like, if your offensive line is short-circuiting everything, and then you obviously lose Elgton Jenkins on top of it, I saw Aaron Banks miss a pretty critical block. I saw Jordan Morgan. Like, I think it's probably giving us a greater appreciation for how good, that 03 group, 03-04 with Tausch and Cliffy and Wall and Rivera and Flanagan was. It's giving us a better appreciation for Sitton and Lang and Lindsley and Bakhtiari and Bulaga. Because, man, when you have that, and I understand those guys, had Hall of Fame quarterbacks at the controls, but when you have that, you can do so much more and do it effectively. There was a stat last night from Next Gen Stats that Love was pressured on 42% of his dropbacks. That's not a winning formula. I'm no football guru, but you probably need to protect better than that. Their run game, while they still had some production, continues to be hit or miss at best. So I think it starts there, but it doesn't end there.
Jason, you think these teams are playing two-shell, and the best way to get them out of two-shell, obviously, is to rush the ball or the tight end has to own the middle of the field. It's not that they don't respect Josh Jacobs. They just don't think this offensive line is very good.
Yes, I think that's exactly it. I mean, I think Josh Jacobs is doing everything he can, but for a guy that was hoping that this year And let's be honest, Goody's plan was for this year for Josh Jacobs not to get hit right away. I mean, how about the fact, I mean, the fourth down play, forget about the machinations of not taking a timeout, but the fact that the Eagles are shouting out the play. I mean, I talked to Josh Jacobs last night, and he heard that. And he's trying to figure out, what am I going to do here? Because they know exactly where I'm going. Like, that, how does, what is he supposed to do there?
Well, like his quarterback's supposed to call timeout.
I also want to point, Benjamin Solak did a little work last night after the game. He pulled up the exact same scenario this season of the Packers doing it, and there was at least four other instances of the Packers running that exact same play from that exact formation in that exact same down and distance.
Huh. Is that now, if you've seen that many times, gang, feels like maybe other teams might have seen it that many times.
They did.
Jason, why is LaFleur calling that play when they're in no huddle? How come that's not on Jordan?
Another good question. Because Jordan, at least in his estimation, is not at that juncture, I guess, in a game like this. I don't know. That's another outstanding question. And, you know, he calls that play, which is so easily recognizable. And on top of that, like, Jordan said it after the game. If you send you the transcript or if you listen to the whole thing, he says, because somebody asked him about them calling out the play, and he flat out admits that that's the play they run.
Yep.
Right. Well, no, but he admits that that's the play they run when they're trying to jump the ball and go fast to pick up a short yardage play. And by the way, it's not even a good play. He's not under center. They're out of shotgun.
But another coaching point, Jason, where their attention to detail sucks. If you watch Jordan, because I watched that play and I'm like, is that read zone? And I'm like, no. If that's the case, why isn't Jordan going out the back door like it's a boot to hopefully maybe draw some linebackers with him? Instead, he goes with Jacobs to the hole and just accentuates what the hell they're doing.
So that's bad, is what you're saying. If I'm
it's bad. It's bad.
Yeah. Look, they're obviously discombobulated offensively. We all know that. But I do find myself wondering, like, where is the trust level that LaFleur has in Love, right? What is he willing to kind of let him do? And that was why I asked him
to let it rip
after the game about the let it rip thing that we talked about before the game, Gabe. Like, I think that's exactly. Like, he's not letting it rip as a play caller. Love isn't letting it rip. Now, again, letting it rip and throwing downfield balls against two deep safeties is probably not a great idea. But as we talked about, too, like, they actually had some success in the intermediate passing game yesterday when they actually did it, right? I mean, even though they were down to, even though they were down to Bo Melton for a ton of plays, which, you know, look, I talked to Bo on Saturday because I just, you know, had this, my spidey sense was telling me that there was a good chance that they were going to play him at receiver. But he said that he had not practiced much at receiver. Now, maybe he already knew that their plan was to use him there and he was just misleading me because he didn't want me being the dogged sleuthing reporter that I am to figure out that that was their plan, but I wrote it anyway, so it didn't really work. But my point is that he clearly did not get enough work, right? I mean, I think the drop, you know, that could have happened if he got a bunch of reps at wide receiver, but my understanding is he did not. So that's part of it, right? Part of it, like, they wipe out that big play to Watson. It was like, what, 20 yards?
Yeah, 22 yards.
And it's because Bo is misaligned and he covers up he's on the line of scrimmage when he's not supposed to be. I mean, you know, those are the kind of details that if you're relying on a guy that you converted to corner, you probably are not going to get the most detailed performance from even a guy that's as conscientious as Melt. So I don't know. It was just, there were just so many mistakes and not a lot of understanding as to why. My favorite line of the night, though, was from Love afterward. I used it as my primary quote in my game story. He basically said, you know, I wouldn't blame those guys on the defense if they looked over at us and said, what are you guys doing? I mean, guess what? If the defense is saying that in their heads and not saying it to your face, the rest of us, including right now, are doing that now. What are you guys doing offensively? Because I don't see a very coherent plan to try and battle the way you're being defended.
Jason, the Elgton Jenkins injury just adds injury to insult. The fracture in his leg certainly will miss some time, although I did see people that were like, well, this is actually the best of the injuries that he could have because he could come back later this season, potentially. Mm-hmm. What will that offensive line look like? Are we now committed to a Sean Ryan playing center, or will there be some movement there in the next coming weeks?
Yeah, I don't think they're committed to it. I think that's still the most likely path. But, I mean, they have Jacob Monk, and as Chewy so eloquently put it during preseason, why are they playing him at guard? He sucks at guard, which is true. I don't know how much better he is at center. I mean, again, we don't have a whole lot of information on what he is anywhere, right? He did the last season as a rookie, he did the Marco Rivera 1996 development plan, except he doesn't have NFL Europe to go, the World League to go to in the summer. Remember Marco? He never dressed up for a single game that Super Bowl year. He was a true redshirt, and that's what they did, obviously, with Monk last year. If they're lucky, he'll turn into Marco Rivera, but at center. But I don't know, Jen. I don't know what they do because, and I say this with high esteem for Elgton, it's not like he was lighting the world on fire, right? Like, he was not playing at anything approaching the level he played at when he was playing left guard.
Looks like Monk took 12 starts at center at Duke over his 5 seasons there.
Yeah, they drafted him to be a center. I don't know if he is. I don't know if he is a center in the NFL, but that's what they drafted him to be.
Yeah, but it's getting cold, so.
Oh, because he has the cold water allergy.
The allergy.
Cold water allergy joke. Jason, that's a throwback. That's
God,
a throwback.
Can we just pause for a second? I mean, again, I went to sleep at 3:12, so I'm sorry I wasn't quite ready for that. But of all the people on the panel that's going to get a poll like that and then leave the rest of us trying to figure out what it was, how on earth is it Shimura remembering that and us not, and us having to pause to figure it out? How is that? What? Up is down, left is right, water, wet is dry. What are we doing here?
Rechew is paying off. Jason, where was Malik Heath?
Yeah, that was one of the questions, because they played Bo Melton more than they played Malik Heath. Now, I think people forgot this, and the only reason I remember is because I mentioned it in a story on Saturday. He was on the injury report during the week. Gabe and I talked about it with Strofe on Green Bay game day. Like, he had a hip injury too. So while he was active, I think he was on a pitch count, or they knew that he was playing through something and they didn't want to play him too extensively. So yeah, he was not playing a ton. You're right. That's another good observation. God, you should put this performance in the Louvre the way you've
I
been
should
today.
Just leave. Showmanship, Jason.
You should. Exactly. You leave while you're still on top. Forget the final 1 hour and 25 minutes you got left.
Jason, is there, and maybe there'll be more, because we're at a point here where coaches are starting to get fired, and does he have a relationship with somebody like Brian Daboll where he could come in just to kind of get a fresh set of eyes on this thing? I'm not saying like, oh, Daboll comes in, starts calling plays, but kind of similarly to what they did, you know, when Saleh got fired and when Nathaniel Hackett got fired, bringing in somebody, obviously Daboll would be an example of an offensive coach working on offense, but does he have relationships out there with anybody who can kind of just give this offense a fresh set of eyes to try to help out and kind of cure what ails them?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't. No one springs to mind when you say that. And I was talking with somebody after the game that works in the building, and the question that they posed was, does he have enough people in his orbit on the offensive side of the ball that can speak hard truths to him, right? Like, I don't know, does Adam Stenovich do that with him? Does Jason Vrabel do that with him? They brought back Luke Getsy, and I don't know about that relationship at all, but there's part of me that at least wonders, well, I don't know if Luke Getsy's going to get after him. Luke Getsy's just happy to have a job. Right? Like, mm-hmm. after the way the two offensive coordinator gigs went for him with the Bears and the Raiders, like, how much is he challenging LaFleur? Like, and the perfect example, as we rewind to the start of this segment, which I sort of remember in my overtired state, is that you run the same damn play every time you jump the ball in hurry up. So, is there anybody that could say, all right, we have a tendency here we probably need to break? Like, that, I don't know that, and that's probably out of line for me to suggest that that's an issue, but it is a worthwhile question that was posed to me and a question that I'm very curious about the answer to.
Jason, that's really good stuff. I think we'll dive into that right after this, because there is a certain structure you need in management where if things go sideways, have you surrounded yourself with people who can help you right the ship? Or do you just have yes men around you who are saying, no, whatever you think. What do you think? Well, whatever you think is what I think. I think that's a conversation that we can definitely have about the coaching structure there, especially offensively. Jason, we appreciate you. Go get some sleep if you can before Wildy and Tausch at 9:00.
I don't know if that's a good idea or not.
Yeah, I feel like that's a bad idea.
I was thinking about that.
I mean, what, you sleep for the next hour? I mean, is that just going to make you more tired?
Cup of Joe, dog walk, you'll be rip-roaring ready to go.
Yeah, get some of that cool air in your lungs.
But then you'll definitely crash at 2 p.m., so.
Hey. Yeah. Show's over by then. Doesn't have to worry about it.
All right, he probably has carpool.
Takes the village to get me through the day. You guys are the best. I appreciate it. Take care. Be good.
You can listen to Jason Wildy on Wildy and Tausch right after Jen, Gabe, and Chewy each and every morning here on 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee. Feeling your best. And I know not a lot of you are feeling your best this morning because, you know, Packers. But it starts with taking time for yourself. And for me, that's my infrared sauna from Good Health Saunas. The gentle, radiant heat helps detox my body, boost circulation, melt away stress after a long day. I've had mine for years now, and I still use it constantly, especially when the temperature starts to plummet. It's amazing for my skin, my sleep, and my overall mood. You can experience Good Health Saunas. Just stop by the Good Health Sauna showroom in Waukesha and learn more at goodhealthsaunas.com/Jen.
You're listening to Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
I don't know which is which, but here's what I
yes,
do.
Yes, all right.
I take the plus and I put it to the plus. I take the minus and I put it to the it minus. Easy.
Yeah, but the jacker things don't have the...
Yeah, they do.
Where?
Sure do. On the handles.
What's a jacker thing? Is it something that your wife keeps in the drawer?
He meant jumper cables.
On 94.5 ESPN.
Construction Inc. help with our home projects. As you might know, my husband and I, not the most handy people, but we know who to call when we have a remodeling project, a home addition, or heck, if we were going to build a new home, and it's the PCI team. And brand new, PCI is now offering a virtual interior design program. Maybe you're not ready for a full construction project, but if you're ready to refresh that outdated room, the PCI team can help you with stunning photorealistic renderings, a mood board, and a curated shopping list, all delivered right to you. You can learn more about this at ProfessionalConstructionInc.com. It's ProfessionalConstructionInc.com. I thought about this last week. I didn't want to say it out loud. I'm thinking about it even more. Maybe Aaron Rodgers was right.
Man.
Oh, stings coming out.
I was about to say, for you to say that.
Stings. I got. If I get Joshy on board with this, I know we're on to something.
I guess I need you to define what you mean by
okay.
that.
So,
I think you already know.
There were a number of times during Rodgers and LaFleur's crossover that Rodgers was critical of Matt LaFleur. Sometimes the offensive scheme, sometimes he would say it lacks timing and precision. Sometimes we obviously know about the motion issues that Rodgers had, you know, sometimes motioning to motion. And I think we're seeing now that, like, it doesn't really seem like Matt LaFleur is building on things, right? He doesn't establish a play and then establish a play and then later on counter off of that play to keep the defense guessing. And the predictability of Matt LaFleur's offense right now does feel like it aligns with some of the criticism that Aaron Rodgers had of Matt LaFleur over the years, Josh.
I think holistically I can sort of agree with the point. I do think we are at the lowest of lows of Matt LaFleur, and he's at the worst point. The offense is disjointed. He is entirely predictable. Here's another thing I didn't mention in my initial rant when I went off of Matt LaFleur. Why is
and here's another thing.
Yeah, I got a lot for him today. So buckle in, people. If you don't want to hear it, I'm sorry. It's not going to stop happening.
He's not sorry.
Why was Quinyon Mitchell on so many of the targets? They have a Dory Jackson out there who's a guy they tried very hard to replace with all the guys that they ended up trading for. Is it possible that because of Matt LaFleur's alignments and the guys that he chooses to put on the field, that they know who the first read is? Because to me, if you know they have one really good corner and another one that's very bad, aren't you going to be targeting the other one, much like teams did with Nate Hobbs? Why was Quinyon Mitchell all over the field? Why was he the main target on Christian Watson, on Dontavian Wicks, on Romeo Doubs? Why was he on all those guys on all sides of the field? Is it because they know where they're going? Because that's what it feels like.
Chewy?
Well, your reads are always top down, right? And pre-snap reads, okay, let's say Watson's clearing out, right? You know if you're going to him pre-snap read or not. So even though he's the number one read, pre-snap you might be off of him. So you say, screw it. Then you go to your next level of reads, which is your mid-levels, right? Your Tucker Crafts, your if they're in Zebra, then it'd be Wicks. Then it goes there, and then it goes to your first level, which was essentially be checkdowns. So, I mean, Wicks got, playing in the slot, 8 targets last night, which is a lot. I mean, he only came up with 4 for 38, so it was nothing special. But that's typically how your reads work. My question is this, okay? Because when they play two shell, or just straight cover two, because shell is kind of, we used to call it cover four, where the corners get a little deeper. All my conversions came from cover two. Okay, it's the tight end's responsibility to control the middle of the field. I don't see that. You know, that's when back in the day, if I had, say, an 8-yard out route and it's cover two, I take the middle of the field, right? And you know you're going to get drilled, but you have to do that in order to get them out of that. I don't see that. I'd like to know what their conversions are. What do you have the tight end converting on? Because I never see the tight end streaking down the middle of the field and catching the ball. I just don't see it. So, because that's the weak spot. The weak spot is the middle of the field in cover two. It's that in the cornered area against straight cover two, because the corners are playing the flats. So those are the weaknesses. I don't know if he's just trying to scheme everything open and guessing wrong because what he's scheming against cover two doesn't work. Well,
again,
I don't know.
I don't know. Again, I'm trying to think holistically. But it feels to me like the Packers offense has been, at least recently, run the ball, take shots downfield.
Hold on.
I can't
run the ball, take a shot.
100%. I can't think of those intermediate routes. I can't think of, you know, and again, I know I talked to you guys in the production meeting this morning. There were times where there were guys open in the middle of the field, and the broadcast team called them out, right? Troy Aikman is calling him out, saying, if he would have just looked here, this guy had created separation. And Jordan's not looking that way. What is that? Is it that there's some like negative narrative about dink and dunking? Much like back in the day, Gabe, you didn't want to be a game manager. Is there some, like, whoa, we don't want to be a dink and dunk team.
Well, I don't even look at those intermediate routes that Troy was pointing out as dink and dunking. Like, those can still be chunk plays. Those can be significant plays because we're talking about 10 yards down the field. Last night, specifically for Jordan, it was probably the pressure he was under. Because the one I'm thinking about specifically with Romeo, like he kind of got flushed up in the pocket and maybe was looking someplace else instead of just looking straight ahead and seeing Rome right ahead of him. But he was pressured on 17 of the 42 dropbacks, 40.5%. Again, this a lot of this comes back to the offensive line. Like, LaFleur knows the offensive line is better, has to figure out a way around it. Teams have won a lot of big games with bad offensive lines. I think of the Cincinnati Bengals a handful of years ago when they went to the Super Bowl. I believe there was a game where Joe Burrow got sacked 9 times.
Yes.
Now, he got sacked a ton. So teams have figured out ways around bad offensive line play. I don't know if he's just so used to having good offensive line play, he doesn't know how to adjust. But a lot of their issues, I think, draw back to how bad those five up front
are. But I would also argue that it's up to the coaches to adjust. It's not just on the quarterback, right? If you're seeing that the offensive line is getting crushed out there, right? Your quarterback has no time to make the plays. Then work in a couple of other plays. Work in a couple of other routes that save him from having to go through your full progressions. Look downfield for open receivers. There's got to be an in case of emergency break glass option.
Here's the thing I thought I'd never say. Where the hell was Chris Brooks? You know you need to pass the ball. You know he's a good pass blocker, and he's probably the best pass catcher out of the backfield. Where the hell was he? He was effective last week. Why were we going to that guy? You need help. You know you don't have the blocking you need.
All right, Joshy. We've reached the Chris Brooks portion of the program.
Yes, because he's a good pass blocker, and they couldn't pass block.
Where was this guy? How come we didn't throw? Okay, I draw the line at why didn't we not throw the ball to Chris Brooks more?
You should stop, because we haven't seen the bottom. The bottom is still in front of us. Jen asked, is this the worst? No, it's getting worse.
Sure, but I don't think, whatever the answer is, I don't think it's Chris Brooks.
Once again, why don't we try it? Nothing's working. Give it a damn try. That's all I'm asking.
You think defenses are just trying to get him out of the pocket?
Yeah, I think defenses just can do whatever they want against this team.
Where they didn't with Rodgers, they're like, hey, we got to keep this guy in the pocket because he is so dangerous when he gets out of the pocket. I don't think Love is dangerous when he gets out of the pocket. Although I like his decision last night to tuck it and run on that play where he came up a yard short.
Sure.
I think it was like third and 13 or something like that. That was a good decision. But is he good outside the pocket? He's not like Aaron.
No. Well, no. I mean, few are, right? Like Aaron getting outside of the pocket, like he would have that feel of when to run. But also Aaron would sometimes just get out of the pocket to give himself more time because he knew somebody was going to break open.
And yeah.
He knew the angles would help him.
Yep.
With guys coming back to him.
And Jordan's not at that point. I mean, when Jordan escapes the pocket, unless there's somebody painfully obvious wide open, I think he's just kind of tucking and run. Like he is probably more dangerous from the pocket in terms of making a bigger play.
Mm-hmm.
800-990-3776. Lots of reaction rolling in this morning on the YouTube stream. Lots of reaction on the Carbless Talk and Text line. We will certainly not be able to get to all of it. But Jim weighing in and says this. You guys talk about tendencies. What about the tendency that every time a can play is called at the line, they run the ball up the gut? Now, I would have to go back and watch and see if that's the case. But are they, when they can't, are they
I think there was one that was a pass last night.
Yes, there was.
There was one that was a pass.
But there was a streak.
Everything else was, yes.
In the second half, where things got particularly quiet and you could hear Jordan and really see him doing the can-can, first of all, first step, you looked back, too high safety. Guess what? Can-can, we're running the ball. And that's what I said when Matt LaFleur's offense has been figured out. The defensive coordinator knows I show too high, I get them to run. And they're not good at running, so we are going to be better off this way. I show it to them, they're going to run it more than they should. I mean, after they scored the touchdown, what'd they do? They came out and ran the ball. You just moved it down the field passing it, and they said, wow, this is Josh Jacobs' time, baby. Let's keep going back to it. It hasn't worked all day. Right back to the well.
And they had a chance late in the game, and I think the broadcast team said it as well, to erase the ineptitude, erase all of the ineptitude, if they were able to move the ball down the field, get a scoring drive.
They had a chance to erase it. They just had to pile more on.
And that went incomplete, complete to Watson, 25 yards. Josh Jacobs ran the wrong way. Remember that one where he was like, why did he turn his shoulder that way instead of turning his shoulder this way? Incomplete. And then I have a completion short of the first down.
Yeah, but it was third down, you know. So, I mean, you had a couple of downs. Like, I didn't have a problem with that third down play because then it got to your fourth and one. And mm-hmm. then they did what they did on
How
fourth and one.
How did that go? Yeah.
Well, they did what they did on fourth and one. But, like, again, I'm completely cool with third and 10 getting 9 yards in that situation. Like, that shouldn't be a problem.
That game. He's not pissed enough for me.
We're not.
The whole thing stinks, Joshy. There's no fixing it. Like, they're not going to fix it.
I know.
They're not going to fix it. Because the offensive line stinks. They're not going to make any of those. The offensive line has stunk for 9 games. They've been bad for 9 games. They're not going to suddenly fix that. And the reason why they were able to have success early is because teams thought that the Packers were going to have a good offensive line. So they stacked the box to slow down Josh Jacobs. At some point along the line, they realized, oh, we don't have to do that to stop Josh Jacobs because their offensive line stinks. And when your offensive line stinks that bad, like, there's only so much you can do.
Here's a question. If we know the offensive line stinks, defensive knows the offensive line stinks, why does their head coach not know the offensive line stinks?
I don't know. But here's the other thing. And maybe this will come later in the week. We should also be pretty pissed at Brian Gutekunst for putting together that offensive line.
Freaking Banks.
We'll take a break
for
here on Jen Game
Insistent and insistent that Elgton Jenkins was an all-pro center.
Phone lines are lighting up. If you're on the line, stay on the line. We'll get to your calls right after this on Jen Game and Chewy.
With a dedicated Milwaukee team, Fifth Third Bank knows what success looks like. For 15 years, we've been serving businesses, organizations, and individuals in the area with a longstanding commitment to the healthcare and not-for-profit sectors. Whether it's expansion to commercial payments, Fifth Third offers a full suite of financial services and solutions to navigate your organization's complex needs. Experience the difference with Fifth Third Bank, National Association, custom solutions built around your goals. Member FDIC.
It's Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Gabe, it'll change your life. Any barbecue you eat for the rest of your life will be measured against Bucky's.
On 94.5 ESPN.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. This November, BetterHelp is encouraging everyone to reach out, check in on your friends, reconnect with loved ones, and remind the people in your life that you're there for them. And hopefully they can be there for you as well. BetterHelp wants to help if life has gotten challenging, if you are struggling. They've got more than 30,000 therapists, one of the world's largest online therapy platforms. They've served more than 5 million people globally. And if you believe in this stuff, which a lot of people do, an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on 1.7 million client reviews. This month, don't wait to reach out. Maybe you're checking in on a friend, or maybe you're reaching out to a therapist yourself. But if that's the case, BetterHelp makes it easier with that first step, guys. Just dial #250, #250. Say the keyword timeout. You'll get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp. Remember, #250, keyword timeout, because we're all better with a little help.
I understand you guys are 5-3-1, still have a playoff spot right now. And you're going to say you're always coaching for your job, but you don't have a long-term extension. With the way things have gone this season, do you think you're coaching for your job?
I'll leave that for everybody else to decide. I'll just focus on the day-to-day and trying to do. I feel like you're always coaching for everything in this league. You know, I that's just my mindset. It's always been that way. You know, you can't ever exhale. You got to always be pushing, and that's just my mindset. So. And that will be my mindset until they tell me not to coach anymore.
I mean, that's your mindset when you're underperforming.
I was talking to Gabe there into his ear. Do you think Andy Reid's?
I was just going to say, he's pretty safe.
Do you think Sean McVay?
Yeah.
I think the list goes a lot further than that. You think Kevin O'Connell?
No.
Yeah. You think, I mean, I know we talked about Ben Johnson just getting there, and of course that means he has the longest leash of anybody else in the NFC North, but I don't see Dan Campbell going,
no.
Every day I'm coaching for my job. What?
I can see him living like that, though. He's that type of
guy.
Yeah,
that's Dan Campbell's mindset. Bad example.
Biting kneecaps.
That's just how that guy, yeah. As Josh said, that's how he lives life.
Right, he's not coaching for it, but he lives his life as if.
But remember when I said to you guys last week, he said something about, I hate third downs? And I said to you, God, that Reed's scared. It reads scared to me. Instead of seeing
does.
A third down as another opportunity to move the chains and get you closer to the end zone, I hate third downs. I just, again, something as simple as that, I had an immediate reaction like, I don't think that that is a great reflection on your mindset when you're calling games. We got to get out to the phone lines, guys. We got lots of people who want to weigh in this morning. Scott in Texas has been waiting patiently to talk about Matt LaFleur. Good morning, Scott. You're on with Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call. First time caller on this show. I appreciate it. But I think it's time for LaFleur to go. I mean, when you got the other team shouting out your play on a pivotal, you know, call in the fourth quarter, Matt LaFleur should have been the most embarrassed guy in the entire stadium. That the defense sees that you're so vanilla and so uncreative that they're calling the play out. And the best thing for me on that play that could have happened was that national television saw it. So now everybody knows that LaFleur, if you didn't know before, is completely predictable and has no scheme or anything like that. I'm letting the offensive line coach go. I don't care about the injuries or not. I mean, the offense line is terrible. I feel bad for Jacobs because he's out there balling and he's got no room to work. And it's just a travesty. But LaFleur needs to go. I don't know. We don't need to wait till the end of the season to cut this dude loose. It's already on the wall. The writing is on the wall. He has not changed. It's the same bland vanilla offense for the last 7 years. We've had a 7-year sample size and nothing has changed. It's just been stagnant for 7 years. It's just time to go and just run with a Halfley as the interim coach, and then maybe find an offensive-minded coach, one with an actual track record, because I didn't think LaFleur had such a great track record when we hired him in the first place, and just kind of see where it goes. But I don't want to waste Micah Parsons and his awesome defense waiting for someone in management to figure out that the offense is the problem, and Matt LaFleur is not the guy to lead us to the Super Bowl.
Thanks for the call, Scott.
The problem with that is I don't think you have anyone that can call plays other than Floor on the offensive staff. I don't know if that's intentional. And it's not like you can bring in a Brian Dapp. He doesn't know the offense. This is LaFleur's offense. You can't come right in and say, okay, here's LaFleur's offense, run it.
If
you can't do that. And then conversely, you can't change it. You can't come in and say, all right, it's week 11. Let's just totally change the offense, especially with a young team. You can't.
You got to roll
with what you got.
If they were to fire him, if they were to fire him in the middle of the season, then I would assume Getsy would become the OC. Like they would, I'm guessing Halfley would become the head coach. Getsy would get elevated to the OC because he's the only one with play calling experience. He's the only one with. Yeah.
Would you feel better?
No.
I would feel better knowing that they're taking it seriously. Would I think they're going to be a team that can make the playoffs or be better off? No.
Yeah. I mean, I think that policy's taking it seriously anyway, Josh. Like,
yeah,
I think that, I mean, again, like if this continues, LaFleur's out of a job at the end of the season. And that's the way they're trending. Like, I don't know how LaFleur's going to right this ship.
You know what's scary, though? This game against New York coming up has everything pointing towards a loss. Short week, national TV game, you lose, on the road, coach fired. I mean, how many times have you seen a coach fired and the team is galvanized.
No, come on.
Galvanized.
Gotta make them fall. Come on. We're already super late here, Joshy. We can't.
Galvanized.
Chewy sitting here fumbling over words. We got
one
bigger
week.
Fish
I'm trying to find some joy today.
We got bigger fish to fry, Josh.
We got the potential.
We are going head to head today.
Of finger pointing going on.
I'm
just scared that this thing could really go south. Because I'm trying not to get too low. It's very hard, but I'm trying not to get too low.
If you're on the line, stay on the line. Got lots of calls to get to this morning. We want your reaction to the Packers' loss to the Eagles. 10-7 the final. Back-to-back losses at home. Woof. Is this the low point of the season? Is it going to get worse?
When it comes to your home, the smart play, it's trusting Gina Della and her team at Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. And this month, score a whole house of new energy-efficient Pella Windows for as low as $297 a month with 0% interest for up to 72 months. That's like a drive you can sustain for years, keeping your home comfortable thanks to incredible defense played by Pella Windows, stopping the drafts. Don't wait. Schedule your free consultation today at PellaWI.com.